Welcome to another edition of Irish Illustrated Insider, brought to you by IrishIllustrated.com. I'm Pete Sampson with Tim O'Malley and Tim Priester. The coaching carousel continues to turn at Notre Dame. Last week, reported Matt Bayless will be Notre Dame's new strength and conditioning coach. And on top of that, reported that Dell Alexander, receivers coach slash tight ends coach at Arizona State, had interviewed for a position. As of Saturday night, at least, I had not had confirmation that an offer had been extended. And then Clark Lee will be Notre Dame's new linebackers coach. So I guess let's start with those. Of those three guys, who maybe intrigues you the most? Who do you think might be maybe the most interesting fit for Brian Kelly's next staff?
I like the fact that they hired a wide receiver coach, considering Chip Long's background as a tight ends coach in the past, and now as the offensive coordinator. I mean, that's got to be something the tight ends love. The offensive coordinator is also your position coach. It's a natural fit that he would also just coach the tight ends. I think it's probably great for staff cohesion that it is Long, and then assuming Alexander rather than having elevating Quinn, who has that offensive line background along with, it's hard to have offensive line background and be in charge of anything where Harry Hiestand is still there, right. And that's not a knock against either one of them. It's just that's Harry Hiestand's unit, and I don't think many people overstep their bounds. I know Mike Samford once said, he was our first interview with him, you know, as offensive coordinator, Mike, coach, are you going to, do you like have your hands in everything? You're starting out with the quarterbacks. He said, I believe you plow your old field, and I don't think I'm going to go down to Coach Hiestand's area and try to plow that field right now. So for the offensive coordinator to say that half in jest, I think this just is a good staff dynamic.
I think the most interesting is Matt Bayless and probably potentially certainly the most influential. You know, his background with Urban Meyer at Florida and Utah, he's a guy that's pretty fairly well-traveled, not in a negative way. He's just been, he was in Mississippi State, so he's in the SEC. And, you know, Mississippi State can physically stand up to just about anybody in the SEC. So I think he has the greatest impact. If Delvon Alexander ends up coming on staff, I think that's important because Jeff Quinn is then not in that mix. And we've talked about the potential chemistry issues with him on the staff. We've heard nothing but good things about Clark Lee. Probably the most controversial, I guess you would say, would be a 24-year-old, soon-to-be 25-year-old Tommy Reese in the mix, you know, as the quarterback's coach. But Matt Bayless is the one that has potentially the greatest influence on this program.
Yeah, and Bayless, the connections to Urban Meyer at Utah and Florida, I think is good. You know, the SEC stuff with Dan Mullen is good. I'm not sure if I totally get the move to Connecticut.
I agree with you there.
But he was at Virginia with Bob Diaco, so maybe they just really hit it off. And I think that at Mississippi State he was football only, whereas at Connecticut he was everything.
That's probably
so. Maybe that was the promotion. Right. But I texted Tyler Stockton a little bit last week when we were breaking this, just to get his opinion because he was a GA for Diaco at Connecticut, and said he absolutely loved the guy. And if you watch some of the reporting that had been done on Bayless at Connecticut, very well regarded. Now, every new strength and conditioning coach is very well regarded as high energy and really got us motivated and all that. But there is some of the effect that a change of messenger can really enhance the message, even if the message isn't that different. So I think Notre Dame will benefit from that. I'm Dell Alexander. He's a USC grad, played there, has a lot of Pac-12 experience, so I think recruiting on the West Coast is a positive there. I talked to somebody who's coached with him, said that he would be a good fit for Notre Dame because he can sort of manage all the different personalities there at Notre Dame. I asked about his recruiting skills, said he was a good recruiter, but not like an insane bulldog on the trail either. So I think you're getting quality recruiter, but not not necessarily like Tony Alford part two. But they need help on the West Coast because they lost two recruiters out there. I think they if you have two coming in with Alexander and Brian Polian, that's a positive. But that's an area of the country where I think Notre Dame is maybe taking a little bit of a step back in recruiting over the last couple cycles. I mean, they do have Aaron Banks coming in this class, Elijah Hicks as well, but it's a spot where I think they could be doing a little bit better, and I think that an Alexander-Polian combination maybe would help you get there.
I know a lot of people sometimes, when Notre Dame invests a lot in California and then comes up short, it's like, well, why are you spending all the time out there? You have to. There's just too much talent out there, and there's plenty of talent to go around for the West Coast teams and across the country. So, it's very important that they remain solid and stable in that area of the country.
Too much talent, and too much of it is at good academic high schools, which I think is another part of it that you have to factor into it. Where you're going into places where people are somewhat predisposed to give Notre Dame a look and make it at Notre Dame when they get here. So I think those two things are important.
Pete, you kind of opened this can of worms with the new strength and conditioning coach is always going to be an upgrade, no matter what, whether he is or not. It's always the new guy in. So we're in for 3 months of best shape of their lives and all that, obviously, in the offseason. But where do you want to see, where do you think tangibly the most important impact can be made? Because fourth quarter, everyone, you know, it was a bad fourth quarter for Notre Dame last year, but it wasn't like that the year before, and it was the same strength and conditioning coach. So for me, it's November, because no one says we're training for the opener when they're training hard in the offseason.
Yeah, I mean, I think, the fourth quarter is a big part of it. November is a big part of it. I mean, I just think that the attitude in the weight room had really suffered over the last year or so. I mean, I keep going back to something that Drew Tranquil said, unprompted to me, after the Echoes Award show, and I said, you know, okay, so you're a captain now. What do the next couple of months have to look like? And he's like, the weight room has to be a competitive environment again. Guys can't come in and just like, oh, I just got to check this off the box of my day and get back to playing PlayStation. Like, it has to be something that guys love to do, and I think that had just sort of gone stale. So I that's where I think, even if the message is similar, the fact that the messenger has changed will actually be a real difference.
You just made so many people mad listening to that.
Yeah, but, you know, I mean, how can that... It's really hard for me to comprehend that a football team, the highlight of the day is not going to the weight room. I don't know how that's... I don't understand how that's possible. But for me, and certainly November is going to be very telling. When I watch a football game, I look at the point of attack, and that's where I think, you know, early in the season we'll be able to say, okay, is this offensive line, is this defensive line adjusting the point of attack? That's where we're going to see it first.
Yeah, I think all those things are part of it. We should touch on Tommy Rees since we're on
We've got a question in the second segment with him, but I mean, that is the most controversial of the picks, right? A lot of it... Tim and I were talking about this during the basketball game the other day. If his name was Brady Quinn, it would probably be universally accepted because Brady Quinn was a great quarterback and with a great personality, and everybody loves Brady Quinn. But Tommy Rees was not a good athlete. They were tired of hearing his record as a starting quarterback.
He won a lot of games.
He won a lot of games, but he lost the big ones, and he couldn't do it with his feet, and so therefore... he's a bad choice. Now, I also realize that people are saying he's a bad choice because he's 24 and he has very little background. But look, the main thing is who can relate to the quarterbacks, and I know people don't want to hear this, but who has the best relationship and best mix with Brian Kelly? Tommy Rees is one of the smartest quarterbacks to ever play at Notre Dame. Not very talented in terms of just athleticism, but I would like to try to be, I guess my point is, I'm being open-minded about this because the bottom line is, who can bring out the best in young quarterbacks? And Notre Dame's quarterbacks are established for, if Djurkovic ends up coming into Notre Dame's quarterbacks are established for how many years? Right. I mean, more than half a decade coming up. So I'm open-minded about it. I realize he doesn't have a ton of experience, but that doesn't mean that he can't be beneficial to Notre Dame.
In what, outside of Alabama, what program is going to be able to have a home run hire for the 10th assistant coach, which is not even mandated yet? Like, there is no 10th assistant coach. So you're asking someone to come in on faith about a legislative issue being voted through and approved, and there will be a 10th assistant coach, and we all fully expect that to happen. But still, I don't see a lot of people tripping over themselves to take a position that doesn't even exist yet. But on top of that, I still think Tommy Rees, because of the nature of coaching quarterbacks under Brian Kelly, where Brian Kelly is actually the quarterback's coach, is a positive. One thing that when this was sort of bubbling around, one of our old colleagues, Matt Fortuna, tweeted this out where one of Notre Dame's quarterbacks reached out to him and said, you know what, Tommy Rees was the only quarterback in Brian Kelly's 7 years that understood Brian Kelly. The only one.
That's so, the most important thing.
Yes.
In this situation, yeah. That is the most important thing. And people hate Brian Kelly, and so naturally, you know, they want somebody that Brian Kelly doesn't know but has all the, I think your point about the 10th coach is not even existing.
Yeah, hello.
It's really, really valid and important here.
Yeah, it's crucial that 54 other Power 5 teams are using the 10th coach as a new special teams coordinator that they didn't used to have, where Notre Dame doubled down and went for a home run hire at special teams coordinator, which everyone listening and everyone not listening should care more about than the quarterback's coach at Notre Dame, is that they have Brian Polian as a special teams coordinator instead of divvying up responsibility across the staff and hoping everything works out fine on Saturday, because that is an upgrade immediately that they are focusing on it. And number two, I will play devil's advocate. I like the Tommy Rees hire. I think he's someday going to be a great coach. He might be a great quarterbacks coach now. The old quarterbacks coach was Mike Sanford, and that is a step down.
Greatest, so just looking at that greatest one. Concern by far is his ability to recruit.
Sure.
Nobody can deny that.
And it was Sanford. It was Mike Sanford in this position.
I mean, as far as background and recruiting-wise, it's a step back there. But we'll address that further in segment two. I did want to talk about the U.S. Army All-American Bowl. Notre Dame had limited prospects there or commitments. Josh Lugg, the offensive tackle, and Cole Kmet, the tight end. I really, really like Lugg. I mean, how many times when we talk about offensive linemen in balance and staying on your feet, that guy is never out of balance. You know, we talk about Hainsey, and Hainsey is a good prospect. Hainsey is out of balance and flopping around the field and on the ground a lot. Lugg doesn't do that. I mean, even when somebody beats him with their initial move, his recovery is outstanding. He's got a real solid punch, and he stays in balance, and he stays on his feet. I really like the kid.
Yeah, I mean, him and Cole Kmet, they only had two commitments down there. Those are two really good ones, two of the best guys in the class. I thought Kmet looks like he's come a million miles from what we saw at Irish Invasion last summer.
He looks like a tight end now, and he looked like a receiver before.
Yeah, I totally agree with that. Those are two good guys. They missed out on the two guys that did commit. Jameer Calvin ended up going to Oregon State. Foster Serrell committed to Stanford. Calvin was a surprise. Serrell was not. Oliver Martin, they're still in it with him. Jake was down there. He felt like sort of Notre Dame or Iowa were the two buzz schools there. And then Greg Robinson, technically they're in it, but not really. He's a DB prospect from California. I don't expect that to really go anywhere.
It was so difficult to ascertain anything about Oliver Martin during the game. They didn't target him. You know, he was almost always in the middle of a trips. They threw the ball to him early. He had no chance. He made a diving attempt. Had no chance. He was on the special team, so there's versatility. But Jake spoke highly of him during the week, right?
Oliver Martin had a good week, and Josh Lugg had a really good week.
Yeah.
To take the game out of it. So it was interesting because on Scout he's rated like high teens at his position, tackles, and on a couple other networks, I think he's in the 30s. But NLS from those two networks were like, whoa, wait, okay, we've got him way too low. So,
well, he's made great strides since his junior year, but I like him. I like him a lot.
So that's a good add to the. We'll get into recruiting more in segment two. Before we jump into hoops, picks for tonight.
It's hard to pick against Alabama. I do think it'll be a close game. You know, I heard someone on the radio, a handicapper, say that before the Final Four, they did all possible matchups, and Alabama-Clemson, it was Alabama minus 10.5, and then after the Final Four, it went down to 6.5, 7, and they think that there's a little bit of a reaction there. Mm. So I would go Alabama as long as you don't put my money on it.
I don't pick against Nick Saban, and I don't pick against Urban Meyer, which cost me in Ohio State's last game since they were hammered, but the potential for a really, really good game is good here. Right. There's no doubt about it. I'm not underestimating Clemson. And I think the biggest thing here is, or one of the biggest things is, there is no fear factor for Clemson. They know they can play with them. I don't think it's going to be a 45-40 game. I think it's going to be much lower scoring than last year's game.
I know it was last year. It really wasn't, though. There was the kick return touchdown, the onside kick. Yeah. Again, Clemson scored late.
That's part of explosive football teams that can hurt you in a lot of ways. But I think it's going to be a really good, I'm hoping it's going to be a really good game. Because we did have some duds of the major bowls. Again, competitive athletics is not played for the sole sake of entertainment of the fans. But
yeah,
you certainly like to see closer games. And I think tonight will be, but what do you think, Pete? Do you pick against Alabama?
No, I would never pick against Alabama. So, yeah.
You looked like you had a bombshell coming. But
No. I'm definitely going, yeah, Alabama, I just hope that it's a good game. Like if it's half as good as it was last year,
yeah,
I will take it as the final game of the college football season. College hoops. Notre Dame continues, like, I think since our last podcast, they've won twice, both late home wins against Louisville and Clemson. I was not at Louisville, but I was at Clemson. I guess I feel like you watch Notre Dame, you feel like they're a good team. I don't know if I feel much different about them, even after the last two games, that they could brush with being a great team. But I think being a good team is really impressive.
Well, I think they're a good team that knows how to win. So as opposed to in the past, they're a good team that you wondered if they would ever get out of the first round of the NCAA tournament when you get there. I know that's not the most important thing for college basketball coaches and players and diehard fans, of which there are five in America for college basketball until March. But this is a team that you see Farrell, Colson, and Vastoria and think, when this team's in the NCAA tournament, no one wants to play Notre Dame. And that's great to have as a fan, right? Mm-hmm. You don't want to play Notre Dame in the second round of an NCAA tournament. If you're a 3 seed and they're a 6, you don't want any part of Notre Dame because of their recent pedigree. And these guys are used to winning. They expect to win. And there's a question down here that's going to talk about the culture. I mean, their culture is they absolutely expect to win all of these games. I was shocked they dropped both Villanova and Purdue in kind of a, the word, I guess, is choking kind of way.
They double-digit leads in both games.
Yeah, it's surprised they lost both that way with their culture.
But they have a tendency to do that time of year. December, you know, I mean, they just do. They're a very resourceful basketball team. They're further along than the previous two teams at this stage because they do know how to win. They're deeper. I mean, they are legitimately deeper than they have been. Mike Bray did some interior decorating at halftime because they came out a little bit flat. I mean, Matt Farrell was due to come out and not be tremendous right from the beginning, and he was sloppy in the first half.
That morning, you and I talked about it. We were trying to pick the game score, and we saw the point spread was 5. We thought, boy, that's an easy one for everyone to think.
Yeah.
But then as soon as that game started, that's why.
Brad Brunell's a good basketball coach, and they lost a tough one in overtime to North Carolina a couple days earlier. But, you know, for me, the main thing is, and you're right, so many times, Tim, I mean, going back to the Digger Phelps years, they couldn't get out of the first game. It's getting to the second weekend. It's getting to the Sweet 16, and then at that point, it's kind of gravy. But, you know, there's still going to be times where they're not going to have enough up front. You'd like to see another post presence besides Bonzi Colson, but he's so good that you can probably get away with just that one. It's just rebounding. I'd like to see Gebben, who's come a million miles, right? He's doing way better than we thought, but I'd like to see him move his feet to get himself in position for rebounds that he doesn't get. And then the notion that VJ Beachum should be benched because he didn't play well for a couple good games, he put that notion to rest. And Mike Bray doesn't do that. He'll never do that. He's going to stick with the guys that got them there, and he hits 6 out of 10 three-pointers, 3 in each half.
I think the Jaren Grant team, clearly the best of the three. Yeah. Not even close. They were one of the 4 best teams in America. Not just had a good run. I think this year's team can be better than last year's team over the course of the season. The key is to make
that right. I'm not saying that this team is more talented than 2 years ago. I'm saying at this stage of the season, the mindset and the ability to win and the knowledge that you're going to win is greater.
I disagree. I think those will be the third best of the three teams they lack enough in the front court. Whereas last year, I didn't feel like they would get hit by a matchup problem. I could see them running into a team in the turn. Like, let's say Notre Dame's at 5 mm-hmm. and they run into a 12 with a couple skilled big men. Notre Dame is in trouble right away. Whereas last year, they could sort of plug any hole you would bring up with matchups. This year, this team feels like, well, they have a lot of good things going on the perimeter. What they have in the post when they were down 10-0 to Clemson, because they couldn't stop anything in the paint.
12 layups.
I mean, there's an issue there. Now, maybe they can get that worked out in some different ways and evolve a little bit. But I do think this team is going to have to move forward in some different ways to get out of the first weekend, probably.
And we all think they're going 1-2 on this road trip, right?
Yeah.
I'm hoping
Florida State, Miami, Virginia
it's
Tech.
It's Miami, yeah. Virginia Tech, yeah, Florida State.
Florida State's in the top 10.
State is beating everybody, and they're deep and they're long. And Pete, I hear what you're saying. I think Mike Bray's using zone defense more than he has in the past to help compensate for some of the issues underneath. But there's no doubt that if they face a big front line early in the tournament, they're in trouble. If they don't, that's kind of the luck of the draw. So I love the mindset of all of this. And, you know, hey, Vastori against Pittsburgh, when he was saddled with four fouls and T.J. Gibbs is sparking an 11-0 run to put Notre Dame up by eight, and then he puts Vastori in. It's like, damn, can't he just leave Gibbs in? But Bray's smarter than we are and has more patience and understands that you go with the guys that are veterans, and Vastori's hit two big ones in the last two games.
Yeah, no question. All right, well, that's it for segment one on Irish Illustrated Insider. We've got a bunch of questions from readers, so all that next, segment two.
Segment two of Irish Illustrated Insider is the Burning Up the Board segment, number two, and we start with Grapey. Mike Elko appears to be a great defensive mind, but are you surprised Notre Dame didn't get a defensive coordinator who specializes in the 3-4 base on our ability to, or inability really, to attract defensive linemen?
No. I mean, they play sort of three-man fronts and four-man fronts, and I do think that unless Notre Dame was going to go back to Bob Diaco's scheme of 2-gap, 3-4, where the defensive linemen essentially are playing the role of offensive linemen and they're just like holding their ground, that whether you're getting a specialist in what Stanford's more 3-4, whether it's a more of attacking 1-gap scheme, or you're just doing a 4-3, I don't think it makes that much of a difference. I don't think you need somebody who specializes in one or the other, unless you're going to go extreme to the 3-4 end, which Brian Kelly said he doesn't want to do. He wants to do multiple stuff.
And if you want to look at it in a myopic view, they have personnel for 4-3 line right now, because that's what's in there, they need to win. That's how they've recruited to this point, and they need to win. So I don't know. I think it's important that he can be multiple, and I
think the whole, especially when you're talking about Mike Elko, the whole 3-4, 4-3 front, I mean, that's so overrated. If you watch their film, they are so multiple. Six guys up front, three up, three down. There's a wide variety of what they do on the front end and the back end. I think that's way overrated. He's the right guy because A, of the multiplicity, and B, getting more out of less. He has a history of doing that.
It's the most important thing, because we feel that's the situation up front, and it doesn't matter how good the back seven is if the front's not, as everyone knows.
Guys like Dalen Hayes and Andrew Trombetti, who are better served up in two-point as opposed to three-point, you'll see a ton of that. And whoever else fits that role best.
Yeah, no, I think that's fine. He'll figure out a way to make something out of what Notre Dame has personnel and maximize that. Who J ND fan, with Paul Longo being a special assistant to BK, how hard is it going to be to keep him out of the weight room and out of the way? I fear not much will change. Much will change in strength and conditioning with him hanging around and quote unquote assisting Brian Kelly. What does a special assistant do anyway?
As Pete has mentioned a few times, Bob Elliott as a special assistant was absolutely crucial in 2015, not only because of his research on triple options and how to stop them. Obviously, his knowledge of defense of 35 years helped him a little bit there, but running the scout team, that is in-season practice stuff. I do wonder, I don't understand what a special assistant can do, and I've asked the question off-season, because you wouldn't think he'd be allowed to be involved in the strength and conditioning mix. Otherwise, you make all your best veteran coaches your special assistants, put them in there, and that is a very valuable weapon to have in your off-season conditioning. So I assume they're not allowed in there. I don't know that for a fact. But, Tim, you have a pretty strong feeling on what won't happen
I do, because I think the scenario that's painted by the question is inaccurate. I don't think... First of all, Paul Longo is not in... And, Pete, you probably disagree with this because you were concerned about him sticking around anyway. But, I mean, Paul Longo is not this overbearing personality. I don't think he'll be in the weight room because that's not his role anymore. And I don't think it will be difficult to keep him out or to allow Matt Bayless to do his job. That's not who Paul Longo is. That's not what his role will be anymore. You know, special assistant, look, there are a million moving parts within a football program. And first and foremost, I mean, he will be a confidant to Brian Kelly more than he will be anything affiliated with the strength and conditioning program anymore. That aspect of his career, at least as it pertains to Notre Dame, is over.
Yeah, no, I agree. I don't think he's going to get in the way or try to muck things. I mean, what is he going to do? Like,
Longo's not
Because ultimately, if he does that, what happens? His best friend gets fired. Like, that's not great. So, look, he has a new role, and he'll be able to fill it, whatever that is. That may just be confidant to Brian Kelly.
And bouncing ideas off of him.
That's fine. But yeah, he's not going to be in the weight room saying like, I wouldn't do the bench today. Like, that's not what's going to happen. JPF 505, based on the projected staff, where does this new staff rank compared to Kelly's other staffs?
You probably ranked them, right?
No, I did not. The
only thing I'm interested in is where does it compare to the one that they just had? And I think, let's do a quick rundown. Tommy Reese that's a step back in terms of experience in recruiting and what have you. Denson's retained. Dell Alexander. Was Mike Denbrock a better recruiter than Alexander? Maybe. I don't know.
I think having Mike Denbrock on staff as a coach, an offensive coordinator who's worked with tight ends and wide receivers,
is a
step back.
Okay, all right, I accept that.
And we don't know it's Alexander, but any new guy coming in around that level.
Harry Heastand is Harry Heastand. I think if Mike Elston's a defensive line coach, I personally think that's a step back from Keith Gilmore. Clark Lee is probably an improvement at linebacker or thereabouts. Todd Light, Elko certainly is a step up at defensive coordinator. And Polian's a step up. And Polian's, a significant step up in special teams. Now, that's just talking about coaching on the field.
I like Elston as a linebacker coach, though.
Well, they did a good job. I mean, the linebackers developed last year, right?
He really developed last year.
But that's probably not going to be his role.
Right, so, no, but I'm saying that is almost a double minus.
Well, but Clark Lee is a well-respected linebackers coach. I don't know that any of us know a ton about him right now.
He's also Elko's guy, so that helps a lot because you need some continuity in your life.
Right.
Yeah, I mean, he was allegedly allowed to pick his own staff, and at least he picked one guy.
Pete, your perspective on that, I don't know if you compared to previous. I only care about the last one. That's the only one that matters.
I mean, is it better? I don't know. I think it's comparable. I don't think it's that much different. The big one, Matt Bayless, is a lot different than Paul Longo. I think that's a big change. But the other ones, I think, are fine.
I'm glad that you said different and not better, because we do not know.
Yeah, we don't.
We did not have a problem with Paul Longo until other people told us there was a problem with Paul Longo.
There is a significant advantage of defensive coordinator.
That alone is really
significant.
Oh, yeah.
And special teams. Sure.
Well, you're going back to Van Gorder, too, right?
Two of the three major positions, actually three of the four, if you include strength and conditioning. Elk over Van Gorder. Pulleyan over Booker.
Nobody. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, looking at special teams, like, that's Pulleyan over nothing opposed to Pulleyan over Booker because they didn't even have a special teams coordinator.
No, his job was, but not only that.
His job didn't exist.
Yeah, it's not even. He was also a special teams coordinator with tight ends coach. That's not the same as being his whole life is recruiting the special teams right now.
So, but it's like, again, how much do you factor in Mike Sanford to Tommy Reese? Like, that's significant, too, because Mike Sanford took a player who was terrible in the spring game and turned him into an early NFL draft pick.
He was terrible, too.
So I give a lot of that to Kaiser.
Oh, Kaiser's of course. Just of course, Kaiser, but still, I mean, that's still impressive.
No, I'm not. I'm, I am.
Yeah.
you know, I'm the first one to say that it's never one factor, it's a million factors. Right. With the development of the player, it's the coach, it's the player, it's a lot of different things. I'm not undervaluing the loss of Samford. I mean, Samford's an excellent football coach.
Yeah, Mike Samford wasn't going to make Andrew Hendrickson the first pick of the draft, or first round draft pick, but he made DeShone Kizer, who did not, that would be a laughable comment by a Notre Dame fan to say DeShone Kizer before the throw against Virginia would ever be an NFL draft pick of any type.
Let alone
first round, potential first round draft pick. So you got to give some credit to
that. So is the staff better at defense coordinator? Yes. Special teams? Yes. The other positions? I don't know. Quarterback is no.
Would you say strength and conditioning? Yes.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah,
so that's
for sure.
Those three.
Yeah.
Well, that's the
three major areas.
Incredibly. Yeah. We just don't. But we're saying it has to be better strength and conditioning because they were terrible in November in the fourth quarter last year. But they didn't used to be. So it's just one of those things. It's hard for me to know until it's like an after the fact. Hey, they were better at strength and conditioning because they won the fourth quarter.
At the very least, you know that the strength and conditioning will be more progressive, more up to date. Would you agree with
that? Yes. I promise you, the defensive coordinator is better than the one that started last year.
Yeah, that's a big one.
That's analysis right there too. I can tell you that.
Irish, way to dig deep. Irish Bob, compare the culture of the basketball program to that of the football program. What lessons could Kelly learn from Bray?
Well, I mean, I think this is an interesting question. It also glosses over the fact that people wanted Mike Bray to be out of here 5 years ago when they were never winning in the tournament. And just
3 years ago.
3 years ago. Yeah. He was a losing coach. He lost. He was below
100. I'm not sure there are lessons that, for sure, that Brian Kelly can learn from Mike Bray, but some of them is the fact that you keep just hammering away and then you maybe make a change of strength and conditioning or like bring in some new ideas, change up your recruiting a little bit. But look, that's all those things have worked for Mike Bray. And then here you are, you've got a team that's, you know, back-to-back Elite Eight. But I'm not sure there's like, oh, Brian Kelly should go out for beers with Mike Bray and like, tell me your secrets. Like, it's not like that. Mike Bray's, this was his 700th game. this just happened. He's been working at it for a long time. Brian Kelly's been working at it for a long time. Last year was a disaster here for Brian Kelly, and Mike Bray has had some disastrous seasons too.
You know what Mike Bray did that Brian Kelly didn't do over the last 3 years? Got a lot better players than he used to have.
Yeah.
Because Jaren Grant is the best guard at Notre Dame since at least David Rivers. Pat Connaughton is the best captain and complimentary player maybe they've ever had. Zach August is the best offensive big man they've had since Troy Murphy. Demetrius Jackson was a great point guard. Matt Farrell is a great point guard. Steve Vastoria is the ultimate winner. And that's what he's had, as opposed to other guys. I'm not going to disparage the players they used to have that were low-level NCAA qualifying players. But those guys are the best players Bray has ever had, and mentally the toughest, too.
Obviously it's Apple. You can't compare football programs with basketball programs. It's there's so much emphasis on football and so much pressure compared to Notre Dame basketball that you can't compare the two. Plus, I mean, is there another personality like Mike Bray?
No.
There just is not. He's just one of a kind in terms of being able to deal with, and not that there isn't pressure, dealing with the pressure, keeping everything in perspective, maximizing three and marginal four-star talent. He wouldn't coach. He doesn't recruit five-star talent. One, because he can't get most of it. Two, because they wouldn't buy into his unselfish system. So very difficult to make those, you know, comparisons, because football, the emphasis on football is so outrageous and so outsized compared to basketball. It's just very difficult.
Football is like, imagine if Notre Dame basketball only was playing NCAA tournament games. And an entire schedule of NCAA tournament.
Good point.
Because that's what football has to do. Like, right. And it's not even that. It's also like in recruiting has the emphasis of the NCAA tournament. Spring practice has the emphasis of the NCAA. It is ridiculous how much pressure there is on football every single day. Whereas basketball, a couple days here or there. I mean, they're a great product, and Mike Bray does an awesome job. But That is, it's not apples to oranges. It's not, it's like apples to spaceships.
But on that note, for a boring look inside our lives, pre-podcast, what were we talking about? How are we going to handle the NCAA tournament if it's the Sweet 16 Elite 8 versus spring practice at IMG Academy and what's going on? Right. I mean, that's how important Notre Dame football is to everyone.
Yeah.
And that's...
But I'm here to tell you.
I know what you're saying.
I'm here to tell you, if they're going back to the Elite 8, I will be at that.
Oh, there's a lot of reps you got to catch in the spring, man. I
don't want to miss those because these are more interesting and more important than ever before. However, all right, CPU 15, who, if anybody, is next to commit?
Well, they've really expanded their recruiting board in the last couple weeks. You know, there's really six defensive linemen. Five defensive linemen could be added to the master list just in the last week. Some more interesting than others. Kendrick Green is a guy they offered just last night. He's a defensive tackle from Peoria, Illinois. He's committed to Illinois. I think he's listed as an offensive guard at a lot of places. But he's pretty interesting. Jalen Harris is a defensive end from Arizona, who's an Arizona commitment they offered. They have Brandon Peely, who's from Alaska, who's a defensive tackle, likely to visit at the end of the month. Myron Tagovioli from Hawaii, likely to visit. Then Jaron Cage, who's been hanging around. So they have really expanded their defensive line board. And considering they have some commitments already on, and I think some good ones, Ewell, Heinisch, less so McAllister, but definitely Ewell and Heinisch. And that's coming off the class of Hayes, Kareem, Okwara, and Ogundeje, where I think we feel like three of those guys are probably going to hit at least. It really makes you really look at the upperclassmen and think, wow, Notre Dame maybe doesn't have as much there as they need or would want. So they've got to get at least another guy in the defensive line, if not two, and that's on top of one more receiver and one more defensive back, and that would just get you to 21 total commitments. And at that point, they would still have extra space, I think.
Elijah Taylor, remember we left him out last week. Yes, another guy on the D-line, of course. And Mike and Duke Treadway and Brandon TSM.
Elijah Taylor makes the musings this week, actually.
Yeah. Excellent.
Teaser.
Yeah, so next to commit, I'm not sure I have an answer for you on that one, but the January 27th recruiting weekend, I think, will be when all of these guys that Notre Dame is making late pushes for will probably visit. Maybe a little bit on the January 20th weekend as well, but still a couple weeks away from that. And I think there will probably be another half dozen new names that pop up on the board too as the staff gets out on the road. Whenever the staff's formalized, you know, with Polian and Long and all those guys. So it's I would think the recruiting news is going to come fast and furious over the next couple weeks.
Our last question comes from ND Troy B. This is a good one, too. Give three reasons why Indy wins more than nine games next year. Conversely, three reasons why they will win fewer than nine games next year.
I think it's pretty easy to list, actually. Yeah. I mean, new defensive coordinator, better defense, more cohesion, more consistency, better tackling. I think that's a realistic expectation. Just the cohesion of the offensive line, the experience together, and special teams improvement. I think those are three things that you can look at and say you have high expectations that those things will happen. Now, on the negative side, schedule's much, at least on paper, and that often changes, although it really didn't this year. It looked manageable, and it was. Next year's much more difficult. My second point would be defensive line impact and playmakers, which is where Elko has to bridge the gap. And then, you know, the power running game and the inability or the refusal to focus in on that when you need to win games in the trenches.
I think it's a 9-win offense. Just point blank, I think it's a 9-win offense that they can get to that with if you just take that into the ball and go to the other most important part. Special teams, they lost 5 games on special teams last year. Flat out, blew the game on special teams in 5 games. Yep. I don't believe that can happen again. And I think the offensive line, the cohesion of the offensive line and what we were talking about a little bit, the basketball game, and I wrote last week, likely move of Bars inside and some serious talent to right tackle there and a redshirt freshman. I do like the offensive line to be better this year than it was last year. As far as why they would lose, let's start off with the fact that they most often, under Brian Kelly, don't win 9 games.
Yeah, I mean, it's fair.
Kind of realistic, right?
Three out of seven.
Three out of seven. The schedule has 10 power conference teams plus Navy, and the break is a good Miami Ohio team with a coach that is primed and ready for the moment of his career coming into Notre Dame. That's your little break, is Chuck Martin coming in with Miami Ohio. And the defensive line, if that's your question mark, it's the worst question mark to have.
Absolutely.
On a football. It doesn't mean they're going to be bad, but that's your worst question mark to
Absolutely.
Have.
Absolutely.
Yeah, I would say 9 wins. The biggest improvement will be special teams. Look, if they just had, if their special teams were average last year, they would have gone probably 8-4.
So sad.
I know. They were that awful on special teams. So just getting that out of the way, I think gets, you flip the record right there. Offensively, I agree the offensive line will be much better next year than last year, in part because I think our collective theory is Alex Barnes will move inside, and then it'll be between Eichenberg and Kramer at right tackle to take over that position. So I think that's a positive. I've written a bunch about how Brian Kelly does better with less experienced quarterbacks than more because they're forced to run the ball and not sort of get overly complicated. That helps. I think the schedule, while it, you can say 10 power conference teams, and wow, look at all these teams that went to bowls. 8 of them are going to have brand new starting quarterbacks. How many of them are going to have new head coaches? I think maybe only one in Temple, which is the opener. But, I mean, outside of Sam Darnold, the quarterbacks are not good on this schedule. And I think that Mike Elko is just, that's an automatic improvement. I don't know how that couldn't be a big boost. So I would say that 9 games is, look, 9 games is the minimum anyway. But I see way more reasons why they're going to win 9 games than not.
Yeah, I would agree with that.
But I agree that if they have a couple injuries on the defensive line, they're going to be in trouble.
My final scheduled thought is, and this is a huge problem in the last 4 years, is they have 5 true road games, and they don't win on the road.
Yeah, that's fair.
Well, you're absolutely right. That's something that has to be reversed. I will say, you know, Elko's knowledge of ACC teams, against that group certainly helps. We talked about this before we went on the air. Mitch Trubisky is turning pro. Elijah Hood has already turned pro. As I've gone through and looked at who's going to be drafted and who are the prospects from Notre Dame's upcoming opponents, North Carolina has lost a ton of veteran players from last year's team. So that's just one team. Notre Dame has to go on the road. That's a great trip, by the way. Did you make that trip? You didn't make that trip to Chapel Hill against North Carolina?
Yeah, that was my bachelor party weekend.
Really?
I wasn't covering Notre Dame yet.
Yeah. Oh, you're gonna like going to that. So. Yeah.
Brad Kaya's out of Miami.
Brad Kaya has turned pro as well.
Solomon Thomas and Christian McCaffrey at Stanford. Juju Smith. I don't know if Odoree Jackson has announced yet.
He's got to go.
Damian Mama announced last week that he's going. A lot of guys turning pro. I know, like, Georgia is sort of the anomaly. They have everybody coming back. It seemed like pretty much everyone at Georgia decided to return, but Malik McDowell at Michigan State went pro. Is it Demonte Thomas? Or I'm blanking on their top defensive back turned pro as well at Michigan State. Look, a lot of teams lost a lot of talent. And it's going to be 8 new quarterbacks at a minimum.
The real interesting thing about that is it was 9 or 10 new quarterbacks last year, but we did not think as positively because we didn't have faith in the defensive coordinator to take advantage of it.
Right.
You would assume that a new defensive
coordinator. But I mean,
think about
that. And I don't know who said it, but it was like, yeah, why didn't I bring that up? It's just Mike Elko's experience coaching against
these programs
and offenses is a significant. That's half your schedule.
Throw Temple in there too, because that's who they beat in the
right.
bowl game.
Yeah. Right.
So.
And they should kill Wake now.
Yeah. So see, he will actually know all the plays legally. Alright, well, that's it for the latest edition of Irish Illustrated Insider, brought to you by IrishIllustrated.com. We'll be back next Monday with our next podcast, so until then, enjoy the national title game, everyone, tonight. I'm Pete Sampson.